This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. This is episode 239 and I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we're going to hear about the Future Event Horse Judging Seminars with Susan Graham-White, who is co-chair of the FEH committee. And then Alan Mann, who is Director of Strategic Partnerships for Adequan, will be joining us to talk about the new $60,000 Adequan Advanced Championships. And finally, in our series of past presidents, as we mark the 60th anniversary of the USEA, we'll be hearing from Charles Lloyd, who was president from 2002 to 2004. And we begin with Susan Graham-White, who, together with Robin Walker, is co-chair of the Future Event Horse Committee. And Susan will explain the Future Event Horse Judging Seminars that are scheduled for the East and West Coast. Susan, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining me again.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
Well, appreciate you spending time to do this, and I think it helps our members to understand a little bit more about these judges' seminars, the Future Event Horse Judging Seminars, of which I understand there are three in total, both on the West and two on the East Coast. So just explain to us the dates and what the program will be in those dates.
Well, this is actually a seminar that is set up for the judges that are already on our judges list, and right now I believe there are 44 judges on our list. So this is something, that we've had a chance to put together. We've wanted to do this for a number of years. This program has been growing, and the structure of it has been getting stronger as we've gone, and we've spent a lot of time getting all that structure in place. Getting the score sheets right, getting the judging criteria right, and the facilities and all of those kinds of things. And now we're at a point where we just feel that we've always said that this is the point where we need to say, okay, now we need to take our judges and try as best we can to get everybody as strong and on the same page as we can. And luckily for us, we've had some funding and help from USEA to do this, which has been super. So these three seminars are going to be for our judges, and they are all to stay on the list. They will actually have to attend one of these three seminars. So that way they will all get the same background education. They'll have a written test. They'll have a mock testing one day, and then the second testing, they'll have an actual second day. They'll actually have a real testing. So we will be able to, really formulate a judges list that we feel is really strong. And I think that our judges are actually really happy to have this happening, because I think all of them, want to be doing the best job they can and want to be, in line, shall we say, with what one judge is doing on the East Coast and one's doing on the West Coast. So I'm really excited that we're finally getting a chance to do this, and I'm looking forward to meeting all the different judges and having good discussions and, everybody getting a chance to like I said, get a chance to show what they can do, because we have good people doing this. We also have wonderful, the program is growing, and we have wonderful breeders who are bringing horses that are the caliber and quality of these horses is really going up. And these breeders are very educated and getting more educated all the time. So this is an important step for the program to make sure that, again, the quality is sustained throughout.
Just run us through the dates and venues for all three of these then, if you would, please.
Sure. Let's see. The first one will actually be September 18th and 19th at Twin Rivers in California. And then September 27th and 28th at Lochmoy Farm in Maryland. And that's both Lochmoy's East Coast Championship and Twin Rivers is the West Coast Championships. And then we're also going to do the same thing at the Florida Young Horse Symposium, which will be, I don't have an exact date for that. Last year it was February 21st, and once they've locked in a date, we'll We'll get that out there, but it'll be sometime around then. So we were hoping that between these three very different areas and very different dates, it would give a good chance for our judges to find a spot that they could come to.
Now, clearly, these are mandatory then for FEH judges.
Yes. This is something that to remain on the list that they have to do. If they can't make it to it this year, they can always we can offer one again next year and pick up on some of the people that maybe couldn't come. Yes, it is a mandatory thing at this point.
Now, you've outlined how the days are going to be split up. Can you drill a little bit deeper for us, Susan, as to what the judges can expect, especially maybe newcomers, people who are thinking of becoming judges for the first time?
They will have a classroom session the first day, which will include a PowerPoint program about confirmation. So there will be a detailed class about that. And then we will also, as part of that, go over the structure of the program. In other words, judging things like what to expect in when you get there and how the triangle is set up and how, what safety things you have to do and basically how to sort of handle a class for anybody that hasn't done a lot of them. So we'll go through all sort of the nuts and bolts in a classroom thing. And then the next day in the morning, we'll be at the championship. So we'll watch some of it and it'll be a really good chance to actually, see it being done, see the judges doing it. And at that point, we'll do some mock testing, which will just be like Robin and I helping the judges, being with them, being beside them as they get a chance to do it on the side with another horse and discussing their scores and discussing, the different aspects of it. And then later in the afternoon, we will do a more formalized testing like that, where we're not helping them, where they actually do it. We watch, we see the scores, we compare them and see how they've done. There will also be a written test on the rules that they'll need to take as well.
Now, you mentioned Robin there, your co-chairman of the FEH committee, Robin Walker. So presumably the two of you will be co-presenters. Will there be anyone else who will be presenting at the seminars?
The seminars, because they are combined with the championships, Chris Ryan and Peter Gray are our two judges for the championships this year. So it's one of the reasons we wanted to do it this way, because it's really ideal because we can also get them involved as well. And we certainly intend to. It's just a great spot for us to, have as much, they can get as much knowledge as they can in one place. And, we want it to be educational and not overly stressful for our judges, but we also really do need to make sure that we feel confident that the judges on our list, as I said, are all looking at things the same way.
Is there anything else then, Susan, that you feel our members should know about to familiarize themselves with this and how they can find more information?
Well, these seminars are only going to be for the judges right now. These are not really open to the public in that sense. All of the judges that are on our list are going to be and already have been contacted by USEA and will be multiple times contacted until they basically show us, where they're going to be attending. Now, for anybody that wants to become a judge for the future, we probably will... At the Florida Symposium, that would be where we would probably encourage them to come, because that is done. We're going to do this sort of on the sidelines there with the judges that need it. But in general, that will still be run as a more open forum for, for breeders or owners, anybody to come in and just learn. We will do that as we've done it in the past. And if we need to do a testing on the side, we'll do it. But we need them to kind of go through that whole process before they come to this for the testing.
Okay, good to know. Any final thoughts?
Just that I'm, as I said, really grateful that we got a wonderful sponsor, and that USDA has been very supportive of us to do this. And Robin Walker and I both are, you know, really looking forward to getting this step going forward, because we know that the people that are competing in these, that, as I said, they really want this program to be quality. They want to bring quality horses to us, and they want the program to be quality. And we feel like this is really stepping up to that.
Fabulous. Well, Susan, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the program and explaining that to us. Again, those dates are the 18th and 19th of September at Twin Rivers for the West Coast Championships, mm-hmm. and then on the East Coast, the 27th, 28th at Lochmoy, again, of September. And there will be one at the Florida Symposium. Dates will be announced, of course, so do follow us on the website and social media for updates. And no doubt the judges will be notified of that too, Susan, presumably.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. They will be personally notified of all of that.
All right, super. Well, thank you very much for your time again and for the work that you do for the Future Event Horse Program.
Oh, you're welcome, Chris. Thank you so much for all the support you give everybody. We appreciate it.
And joining us now is Alan Mann, who is Director of Strategic Partnerships for Adequan, and he's going to explain the new $60,000 Adequan USCA Advanced Final competition. Alan, welcome to the program, and I think this is your first time on the show, so thank you for joining me.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you, Chris.
And you have been, of course, with Adequan a number of years now and a loyal supporter of the USCA. So we want to talk about the evolution of this competition, which we're now calling the $60,000 Adequan USCA Advanced Final. Tell us the story behind that, Alan. How did that come about?
Yeah, so when I came back to Leupold Pharmaceuticals, now we're called American Regent Animal Health, but when I came back to the company in the end of 2004, after having spent two earlier stints with the company, I realized that we needed to target the athletic disciplines, and of course, eventing being one of the most athletic disciplines out there because of what these horses are required to do. I ended up sitting down with Joe Whitehouse and several other folks, and we talked about how, at the time, Adequan could get involved in the sport of eventing. And through our brainstorming, we came up with, in addition to a number of other benefits, the Adequan USC Gold Cup. And back then, it was a series of competitions all over the country, and the riders would accumulate points over time riding in all of these various events, and at the end of the season, the one with the highest points would win the Adequan Gold Cup. And back then, we started it both with the intermediate as well as the advanced levels, so it was it was quite interesting, and I think the biggest challenge we faced early on was the fact that people had their schedules in place, and they really weren't that familiar with how the format worked. So between the USCA and our company, we continued to communicate the program, and realized that it needed to change, and from those days we went to a winner was designated by the number of points to today, where we're at with the Adequan $60,000 Advanced Championship, where they'll actually be competing for a purse and the winner will be handed a check for $30,000. So it really has evolved into becoming one of the premier events for the USCA. And from what I've been told, it's the second largest payout next to the Land Rover Kentucky three-day event.
Yes, that's fantastic. And I'm interested, though, how it became the advanced final and went from being the Gold Cup, then that you decided to change the title and change the direction a little bit and increase the prize money. Talk a little bit about that, Alan.
Yeah, so, with Rob Burke, the current executive director at the USEA, we've been brainstorming along with several of their presidents in the last probably 5 to 6 years on ways to make it more appealing and to try to get the top U.S. riders at the advanced level to want to participate in this, event. We originally thought that if we had the money, that would attract them, but we realized that there was more to it than just throwing prize money out there. It had to be orchestrated with timing of other events going on around in the country. And with the AEC championships typically taking place in August, trying to come up with both a location and the incentive for attracting the top riders from the country. And I believe the last few years, the location was challenging. We had it out at the Colorado Horse Park, which did a wonderful job, but it was quite far from riders on the East Coast to travel. And again, because of the scheduling, it made it challenging to get some of the top riders and top horses to show up. So the decision to go to the Kentucky Horse Park for both 2019 and 2020 really changed the whole dynamic of the event. And we decided that since we were going to team up with the USEA, going to the horse park, adding a little more incentive to not only the winner, but paying down, I think, I'm not sure how deep they're going to pay down, but most of the participants will end up getting some monies that will at least hopefully cover some of their transportation needs to have come to the Kentucky Horse Park. So I believe that this will be the largest competition ever with the AECs, the American Venting Championships. And we expect the advanced division to also be probably the highest attended since we started this series. So we're really excited. And in talking with the USEA recently, the numbers were looking very strong. By the end of this week, I will have the numbers of overall horses that will be competing, as well as those that will be competing in the advanced championships.
And I would imagine, given the products that you have with Adequan, Alan, that the eventing market is an important one to you because you've been such loyal sponsors of eventing now in the USEA for a number of years, haven't you? So this will probably be your signature event, this showcase competition for eventing, will it?
Absolutely, yes. The eventing community, just because of how amazing these animals are when you think about human triathletes, and we look at these equestrian athletes as being triathlons as well, and what we're asking them to do over a period of time, if they're not hitting on all cylinders or they're having any challenges with their health, it's going to have an impact on really how well they perform. So we have always been really committed to education as a key to the health and well-being of these amazing animals. And that's even across all disciplines. But when you look at what the venting horse is being asked to do, it's pretty amazing. And we're just really excited that we're able to not only be there to support both the riders, the owners, the horses themselves, but to really continue to educate all of these people on how important it is to maintain the health and well-being of these horses. And what's really interesting, we support across all athletic disciplines, hunter jumpers, the dressage world, we get into the reining world. We are a big partner with AQHA and support a lot of their competitions, as well as the Arabian Horse Group, and they have some amazing athletes that can do 100-mile races. So we're really targeting all the disciplines where the athleticism of the horse is essential to the outcome of whatever they're competing in. We even see that in the racing world, where we support both the thoroughbred, the standardbred, and the quarter horse racing communities. And, you know, again, we're looking at just amazing athletes. And we have seen a lot of these thoroughbred horses ending up in the eventing world. And so it's always nice when you can have some of these horses in their second or even third career, and just seeing how amazing they are to adapt to the different disciplines they're being asked to compete in. I do believe that the eventing world is very knowledgeable when it comes to maintaining the health and well-being of their animals. I've had opportunities to go to a number of the Olympics as well as the World Equestrian Games, and spend time with the team veterinarians, as well as the farriers and the grooms, and just see the amount of work that goes into caring for these animals, not only during competition, but leading up to competition. So it's a fascinating sport. We're so excited to be part of it. We're so excited to be present the end of this month at Kentucky Horse Park, and I expect it to be really a tremendous experience for everyone that shows up.
Well, we certainly are looking forward to it, Alan, and having you there, as always, supporting us. And are there any final messages that you would like to give to our members about the about Adequan and their support of this event?
Yeah, I think it's important that you know, we just continue as an equestrian community to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to take care of these amazing animals. You know, they rely on us for everything, for their health, for their well-being, for their growth, for nurturing them to become the best possible athletes they can be. And with the eventing community, I'm just so excited that the community in general does a wonderful job caring for these animals, and we're just so excited we can be a part of that whole process. And if anybody is interested in learning more about our brand Adequan, they can go to our website at www.adequan.com. We have a pretty good overview of just joint health and how things function at that level, and how products like Adequan can benefit the horse. So we're looking forward to the championship. We're looking forward to seeing a lot of our friends over the years, and of course, watching these amazing animals do what they do.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Alan, for coming on the program and sharing that with us, and of course for your continued support of the U.S. Eventing Association. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris, and you have an amazing day.
And in our final segment this week, we continue our series of past presidents as part of our 60th anniversary when we invite them to reflect on their term as president. And joining us this week is Charles Lloyd, who was president from 2002 to 2004. Charles, welcome to the program and thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's an opportunity to look back in your rearview mirror somewhat, Charles, to that time when you were the president, of course, of the USEA. The early 2000s, mm-hmm. which was an interesting period because we had heard from Loris Henry in a recent episode about that transition that she went through with the governing body's status and so on. And then you came along and took over the reins from Loris. What were your earliest memories of what you were inheriting?
Oh, my goodness. It was just such an incredibly busy time, as I recall. I mean, the association, U.S. Eventing, or the USCTA, as it was known beforehand, had just gone through a period of tremendous change, where they had gone from a small cramped leased office into a new permanent facility that they owned, and staffing changes and an increase in the staff at the office. The previous 5 or 6 years had been incredibly busy just creating just a good infrastructural base for the association. And I just felt really lucky at the time because I came in pretty much right after all that hard work on building the infrastructure for the association. And which was an opportunity at the time because whereas a lot of energy had to be focused on building foundations and doing a lot of just institutional work to get everything situated. All that was done by the time I came in, and a lot of that energy was just directed to, new ideas. I mean, there were tons of ideas coming up all over the place from different people, and all these people being inventors, they had the energy and the will to take those energies and run with take those ideas and run with them. And so it was just so busy trying to keep track of so many of those ideas that were popping up at the time. And a lot of which are still, very established programs today, like the instructor certification program. That was an idea that was basically in its infancy right as I came on board as president. And tremendous amounts of work was done on that for the couple of years that I was in office, and there's just so much work to be done on that. I mean, just to think of the different levels of certification, the criteria for them, gathering the best practices, and then just getting the buy-in from the sport to introduce a program like that. It was fun to see that come up and develop and then be launched. One of the many things that were happening at the time. And then let's see, what are some of the other ideas? With Young Riders, of course, Young Riders had been around for quite some time and the NAYRC, but there was a desire to create, I guess, more of a pipeline for horses and riders coming into the NAYRC. So there were a lot of ideas to create sort of what was at least at the time talked about sort of as a group apprenticeship program, which was basically the ideas that started the Young Rider Advancement Program. And I think it might still today be called the Young Rider Advancement Program. Basically an area-based initiative to bring, lower level young riders into the same experience a lot of the upper level young riders were going through as they prepared for the Young Riders Championships. I guess in that program encompassed all the levels, beginner, novice, and training and preliminary. So it really worked on developing the young riders from entry level up into two-star international competition.
And when you came on board then, yeah, I'm just thinking of what you must have, you know, the position you must have been in then, Charles, when you were taking over the presidency from Loris at a time of so much change in the organization. Did you yourself have an agenda thinking, well, now, you know, the stage has been set for these new programs, as you've just described. Did you have a to-do list yourself that you felt you would like to achieve during your term?
Well, I did. I did. I mean, to support these programs is one thing for certain. But one of the things that was very important to me and that I worked on quite a bit of the time was getting a start on and getting a champion national championships off the ground that later became known as the American Eventing Championships and the AEC. That was something that was important to me. That was an idea that I really wanted to help carry through and make sure that came to fruition and got on the slate of competitions in the country. That was something that I spent quite a bit of time on. Not just me, there were lots and lots of people focused on developing that concept, you know, the what, the who, the when and the where. That was, none of that had been, you know, basically decided at the time I came in. And that was a process that started then and continued on for my time there. Seeing that the AEC found a location at the Carolina Horse Park and, you know, found a time on the schedule. That was what I regard as one of the most important things on my docket at the time. And then of course, as you mentioned, there were a lot of institutional preoccupations, like what you're talking about, not so much at the USCA, but the issues going on between the HSA and the USCT at the time, the problems that they were having running up against the Ted Stevens Sports Act, that those two organizations pretty much had to find a way to consolidate their operations and to merge into one entity. That was a big time of strife in those two organizations. And it involved U.S. eventing because, we were one of the Olympic sports. And we were one of the Olympic sports that was really managed outside of those two organizations. Eventing and dressage both were Olympic disciplines that were maintained outside of those two organizations. And just trying to navigate that period, well, U.S. Eventing and USDF both had a tough time navigating that period because we liked what both of those associations did, what the HSA or USA Equestrian and USCT did. We liked and supported what they both did and wanted to make sure that the successful operations that they both had independently were things that they were going to be able to successfully merge under the masthead of one organization. And whenever you get two associations doing something like merging, I mean, there's just so much institutional inertia that has to be dealt with. And just trying to steer the course of neutrality at that point in time was also something that was definitely on my plate.
And of course, you were halfway there, midway through the Olympic cycle, riding off the success of David O'Connor, of course, the gold medals from the Sydney Olympics. The sport was, I think, generating a new wave of interest and enthusiasm with that kind of success. And then we were heading towards Athens in 2004. So midway then in that Olympic cycle, did you feel that an increase in membership, increased in interest in the sport generally because of the success in Sydney?
Well, I think so, definitely. I mean, the success that was in Sydney, I mean, David's amazing work there and the whole team. I mean, the whole team did amazing there. And then following it up at the World Equestrian Games, I believe, in 2002. And where was
that? In Jerez.
Spain? Was it,
yes.
It's Spain, I
believe. Jerez.
And,
yes.
Yeah. And just their fantastic showing there. If David being part of the crew there, and then a bunch of other riders coming up to the ranks, showing how successful they could be on an international scene too. There was definitely more interest in the sport that was coming from that, and that was one of the goals of the board at the time too, and of the executive committee of the U.S. Eventing was to try to capture those new eyeballs and to really direct them into and channel them into the sport, both as spectators and as potential members and riders. And that was one of the ideas behind the AEC actually too. It wasn't just done to have a combined unified national championship for the USEA or US Eventing. It was also to create this event which could be sold to spectators, which could be marketed to spectators. To make more people aware of our sport, to show everybody the excitement and just the wonder of our sport, and to get them more involved, both as spectators and as riders. And there was another reason for getting the spectators involved too, getting them into a framework where you could really channel spectators in one direction or another. Because one of the things that our association hadn't really been able to develop up until that point was just a significant sponsorship book. There were definitely some good sponsors that we'd always had, but we hadn't really had marketing products that we could offer to sponsors that would help them accomplish their goals. And developing the AEC and the Gold Cup Series at the time, because that was something that I believe was born at the time too, developing those and harnessing those so that they could be used as marketing elements of the sport was one of the primary goals of those two programs.
Of course, we've seen the growth of the AECs, the Young Rider Program, and the Gold Cup, as you say. So much happened in that period too. In terms of the nuts and bolts, though, the kind of things you were working on from meeting to meeting there, Charles, what other major milestones would you say took place during your term?
Oh, goodness. Well, that was a lot right there. The ICP, the YRAP, the AEC, that was a lot of work on everybody's mm-hmm. part right there.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of tactical issues too going on. Just completing the migration for the information systems from, very old tech from late 80s, early 90s onto more of a platform that was going to be more able to take advantage of the web-based infrastructure, which was rapidly growing and developing in the country. That was, that took a lot of time and effort. I know Jason Caldwell came on board at that time at the office to help manage all of that. And then other programs too. Oh, well, the Young Event Horse program, that was something which I know Joe, that was something that was very dear to Joe, and she worked very hard to develop that, to basically help create a pipeline for breeders to bring younger horses on into eventing. Just like the YRAP was a pipeline to bring young riders up to the ranks, Young Event Horse was a pipeline to bring new horses and stuff into the ranks, and quite a bit of work went into that.
So there was a lot happening in that time then, Charles. I mean, they are major programs you've just described there that happened during that time that have really been set up now for the future, and all of which are thriving and growing.
Well, and that's fantastic. I think that's just testament to all the people that worked on it then. So many people just so passionate about all these projects, and they did a lot of hard work, did the legwork, got the buy-in, and launched them. And like you said, they've developed and successful to this day. So it's, yeah, really testament to all their hard work. And of course, you know, the office, Joe and everybody at the office just worked long hours to get these things off the ground and to provide the support necessary for them to do so. So my hat's off to them and also for them being patient with us during the process. dealing with a whole lot of volunteers is not an easy task. And the professionalism they showed and the patience they showed with us, you know, while we worked through that, was, you know, I'm appreciative of to this day.
And so when you look back at your time in office now, and now you've had some years to reflect, Charles, what are you most proud of?
Oh, my gosh. I was proud that I was allowed to be a part of it at the time. Very exciting time, and I was very happy to be a part of it. And I saw it for a long time. I was on the board for almost 10 years. It was the last couple of years as president, but just to see the migration of the association from you know, from what was really a smaller volunteer driven organization to a much larger, much stronger, professionally driven organization with a lot more passionate volunteers behind it. That because of the infrastructure that had been built over the 90s, was able to just really take off. And just being part of it was really what I'm so proud of. Just glad that I was able to help in there. And as far as the projects that are still going on now, that I'd like to, I think the AEC, just getting that thing out of the phase of being an idea and getting it into the place where it had a location, a purpose, and a time on the calendar. That, I'm just glad that I was able to help during all of that.
Well, very, very interesting times, yes. Any final reflections, Charles, that you'd like to share with our members?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see, any kind of final anecdote to sum it all up? What's rushing into my mind right now is not so much a single anecdote, but just all the mental pictures of that era of competition, that era of eventing, that just sort of come to mind. Everything from, and not just my experience from being in the office with everybody, but just being out on the horse and competing. Just the wonderful things that the experiences that this sport brings to you and makes possible. Galloping along the rocky beaches of Monterey Bay near Carmel for the Pebble Beach Horse Trials out here. Just the autumn colors on Phase C of Roads and Tracks at Radnor. Just being up in Napa Valley, seeing the sunlight on the low-hanging fog as you're doing your final course walk right up there on the mountain at Wild Horse Valley. Having the Grand Tetons in the background as you're competing in Jackson Hole Horse Trials. And then, feeling like you're in some old John Wayne Western as you're flying by Saguaro Cactus on course at Trojan Horse Trials near Scottsdale down in Arizona. I mean, those are the images that sort of just flash into my mind. And while, most of those horse trials themselves are no longer around, the memories they brought, of course, last, last a lifetime. As I'm sure that's happening right now in the minds of so many people at all the comps that have now come to take their places, take their place over the years. So I guess I'll leave you with those images there. Sorry, I couldn't come up with a final anecdote. But
wonderful, colorful imagery, Charles. That's a lovely way to round it up. Thank you very much for that and for looking back over your tenure as the president. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on the program. Thank you, Charles.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, for giving me the opportunity. I definitely appreciate it.
And thanks to all of our guests this week, Susan Graham White, Alan Mann, and Charles Lloyd. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode of the USCA's official podcast. Until then, be sure to follow along and share on social media at US Eventing and visit our website at useventing.com for all the latest news. Until the next time, thank you for listening and enjoy your eventing.